This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is that time, everybody, here with Wyman and Bob. It's time for our player spotlight. A pleasure to speak to this guy. We had him out at Edgar's very early in the season. Now it's pretty cool to catch up with him as we head toward the home stretch of the regular season. Joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, Robbie Ray is with us. How are you, man?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing great. We caught up with you very early in your first season here out there at Edgar's, and that was a fun conversation with you that day. And I'm just curious, from that point to now, just looking at what you've done, you go over 200 strikeouts for the fifth time in your career. It feels like you've found your rhythm, so to speak. How do you feel like the season's gone for you, year one with the Mariners?
Yeah, I feel like, it's gone pretty well. I feel like, there's some things that, I learned about myself. I learned that, I'm able to make adjustments on the fly kind of when I need to. I spoke about it in a post-game press conference, a couple weeks ago, talking about how, this year has been a year of adapting, a year of embracing, that part of the game and just being able to make changes. And I feel like I've done a pretty good job at doing that, when not getting too stubborn and being able to adapt and to change to, what's working.
Yeah, Robbie, going back to kind of those changes mid-season, there had been a lot of talk about you adding the two-seamer in the middle of a season. I imagine that's difficult to do. How did that come about, and when did you realize, all right, I'm going to have some confidence and I'm going to utilize this pitch?
Yeah, it kind of started in the start against Houston at their place. They were kind of on my four-seam, on my slider. They were really just on everything. And, I had a conversation with Skip, and we just kind of talked and said, we got to switch it up. We got to do something. We got to do something different. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, like, what else can I do? What else can I do? And, I probably scrapped the two seam maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So I was like, let's just try it. What the heck? And, it ended up getting me through that game. I was able to grind it out, and it's actually become a really, really solid pitch for me. So, if I hadn't gone through that struggle, gone through that adversity, I would have never even found that pitch.
Would you have ever considered the knuckleball?
I'm just kidding. What's funny about that is, it might have been a few starts ago, maybe my last start, or two starts ago. We work with the PitchCom, and there's some times where you're shaking for a pitch, and I actually heard knuckleball come across the PitchCom, and it kind of came across. I didn't give like a "what are you doing?" It was more of like a "let's maybe try this."
Had you thrown a knuckleball before? Could you have gotten it over the plate, do you think?
I think so. Yeah, I used to, when I was in high school, my senior year, I would try to finish every game with a knuckleball.
Okay. That seems like the pitch you hear a lot of guys who are power pitchers towards the end of their career, when maybe they lose a little bit of the velocity, they start thinking, I could extend my career if I can nail this knuckleball down. I can extend my career by 5 or 6 years, perhaps.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, it's something that's in the back pocket, and if I ever need it, I think it'll be there.
Hey, Robbie, after you added that two-seamer, I feel like it was about a month later or so that then George Kirby did the same thing. How did that conversation come about? Did he notice something you were doing, or is it just when you guys were going through a bullpen or had some time that he kind of came to you and picked your brain about it?
Yeah, I think it happened kind of organically. It was something that I had tried and had some success with, and then, down the bullpen, just working on it. And, he just kind of said, I think I could maybe throw one of those. And George is awesome. He will try everything. And if it doesn't work for him, he knows. And he'll throw it out and move on to the next thing. He's not just going to sit on something just because you say something is going to work. He tinkers. And I think that's what's, why he has success, is he's always trying to get better. And so it kind of just happened organically down in the bullpen one day. He was like, hey, I think I'm going to try throwing this. And he started throwing it, and I was like, yeah, maybe you should throw that. That thing is nasty. And, you know, typically, you know, you would think like a guy would normally be able to, you know, throw it into righties, you know, for George being right-handed and, you know, away to lefties. But the guy commands it on both sides of the plate, and he throws it almost better to his, you know, glove side when he's front hip and lefties. It's a pretty special pitch.
From a veteran's point of view, I mean, you've achieved a lot in this game, obviously, as a Cy Young Award winner. You've been in the league, I think this is your ninth season. To watch a kid like Kirby, who's 24 years old, his first season, a rookie, to do what he's done just in the way of command. I know yesterday was a little rough for him. That was the first game, Robbie, where he's walked more than one guy. I just, for a rookie, I find that absolutely astounding. What, just from your view as a guy that's done and seen it all pretty much at this level, how amazing is what he's been able to do?
Oh, it's been truly amazing. He has unbelievable feel and unbelievable command of his pitches. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, for his age that, and for his experience is like you said, it's unheard of. You don't really see it. And, you know, he falls behind guys. He knows that his stuff is still good. He knows that if he's in the zone with it, he's still going to get you out. So I think, you know, he's got that confidence that his stuff is good enough to get you out, even if it's 3-0. But he very rarely gets to that 3-0 count.
Hey, Robbie, these young guys, Kirby and Logan Gilbert, are dealing with pitching longer than they ever have, more innings than they ever have in a professional season. For you, how did you learn in your career to kind of push through the end of the season, and have you altered your routine to kind of stay fresh now as these seasons build up for you?
Yeah, I think you just have to listen to your body. That's the biggest thing. You know, you got to take your days when you know you need them. And that's kind of been my message to the younger guys, is that it's a long season. You know, you got at least 30 starts, and, you know, hopefully more than that, counting the postseason if we can get there. So, you know, you gotta pace yourself, and you gotta listen to your body and know when it's time to take a day off of throwing, or, you know, when you need to get in the training room and get some work done, just get, you know, routine flush of whatever. So I think, you know, my message is just taking care of your body, but also listening to it and doing what it says.
You know, I mentioned during the intro when we brought you on that you go over 200 strikeouts for the fifth time in your career. Is that a big deal for you? Do you set markers in terms of, you know, strikeouts or wins or ERA or any of that kind of stuff?
Not really. I feel like I have the stuff to strike out, you know, 200 guys every year. So I'm not really chasing the strikeouts. I'm trying to get deep into games. You know, the innings thing is probably a bigger thing for a starting pitcher in my perspective. Getting to that 200 innings mark is kind of a benchmark for, you know, where a pitcher should want to get to each and every year. So the strikeouts, I think if you are a strikeout pitcher, they're going to come if you get to that 200 inning mark. But yeah, I think for me, I'm not really chasing the strikeouts, but it is nice when you do have a guy 0-2-1-2 and you have that put away pitch.
Did you know Luis Castillo at all before he joined the team? And what's the impact that he's brought since adding that rotation?
I actually, you know, I've played against Louis quite a bit, but never really knew him. But he's been awesome. He's a amazing teammate. He comes in every single day, smile on his face. Start day, got a smile on his face. He super easy going, laid back. And, man, that guy can pitch. I mean, it's really fun to watch him out there on the mound. I mean, he's throwing 100-mile-an-hour sinkers that are starting in the left-handed batter's box and moving all the way across the plate. So, I mean, what is there not to like about that? And, you know, I think, you know, more than who he is as a pitcher, who he is as a teammate, it speaks more. And, you know, he's just great in the clubhouse, great with guys. And he keeps it loose for us. So it's a lot of fun having him around.
Robbie, on your days that you're pitching, are you one of the guys that, all right, nobody talk to him, nobody mess with him, you're in your zone, maybe you got headphones on or something, or are you a guy that's out there just like it's any other day? It seems like every starter's different in sort of how they approach their day. How do you handle it?
Yeah, so for me, you know, it's changed throughout the years. When I was earlier in my career, I wouldn't really talk to anybody. I'd sit in my locker with my headphones. But that's not really my personality. So for me, I kind of take it, I would say, pretty similar to any other day, come in and talk with the guys. But when it's go time, when it's, you know, hour before game time, hour and a half, and I'm starting to get ready, that's when it's time to lock it in and things get serious. But, you know, before that, I like to keep it loose, because I would always get you know, just mentally drained being that guy that would just sit there and stare into the corner with his headphones on, not talking to anyone. So, you know, for me, it was, that was exhausting, and it's not who I am. So I just try to stay true to myself and be the same guy every single day.
Now, when you do wear the headphones though, what are you listening to?
Usually country music. You know, I bounce around usually like 90s country. I love Alan Jackson. I'm pretty much locked in on country music, and like I said, 90s country is probably where I'm at.
Hey, so going back to that with the routine, and I know when you're making a start, it's finely tuned down to even the minute. When you're a visiting pitcher, something that we saw yesterday, and your team puts up a lot of runs, well, it's going to be a little bit longer than anticipated maybe before you're going out there on the mound. Is that tough for a starter, or have you learned to deal with that as well?
I don't think so. I think you learn to deal with it. I think especially, you know, when you're on the road, there's all kinds of factors that play into it, and there's a lot of things out of your control. So you try to just control what you can control, and that's your routine. And, you know, maybe you start a few minutes later because you know, the anthem's going to be later, or you're going to have more time to walk in later because, you know, you're not going out there immediately after the pregame introductions and stuff like that. So, you know, you push your time back a little bit. You kind of have a home routine and an away routine. So, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, for some guys it may be difficult, but it's just part of the game.
I know you've heard this a million times probably this year, but as we're down to just a precious few games left in the regular season, I assume you've gotten a really strong sense of how big this is for this city. The playoff drought that has lasted two decades, and here you guys are, you guys are in the thick of the wild card race. Is that anything you guys discuss, or is it just something you're keenly aware of it, but maybe you don't talk about it? How do you sort of handle that whole thing?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, the message that I've relayed all season is one game at a time. You know, we can't control what happened yesterday, and we can't control what happens tomorrow. So we need to focus on what we're doing today and what we can do to help the team win. You know, winning every at bat on both sides of the ball, winning every pitch on the mound, and winning every pitch in the batter's box. And I feel like, if we can stay focused and stick to that game plan, that process of just winning every pitch and focusing on today's game, then I think, you know, when we look up at the end of the year, we're going to, you know, be where we want to be. I think you get into trouble when you start thinking about four, five, six, seven games down the road. Our focus has to be on what we're going to do today to help the team win.
Do you draw on that experience from last year at all? Because you went through a very similar situation with the Blue Jays. The Mariners were going through the same thing. Or is it, you know, different team, different season, and it doesn't really apply this year?
Yeah, I think it applies every year. I think, you know, you have young guys every year that, you know, you can feel the tension. You can feel the pressing. And it's just like, hey, all we need to worry about is what we can do today. And that's it. And you trust your process in the batter's box, you trust your process on the mound, and you know, it doesn't always work out the way you want it to, but we're going to give it 100% effort and see where the chips fall.
Hey, I think when we talked to you at Edgar's, you'd mentioned when you'd come over with Toronto the previous season, and you were remarking on the crowds and how just intense they were toward the end of the season. And now you're in the middle of it. You're in the thick of it playing for the Mariners, and it started much earlier. The buzz, the buy-in, the intensity. Is that something you've picked up on as the season has worn on, just the crowds getting a little bit bigger, a little bit more intense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I noticed it the last time we were home. It was like a Thursday, and it was a sold-out crowd. And I was like, wow, sold-out crowd on a Thursday. That's not something you normally hear. So you can definitely feel the energy. You can feel the city. You can feel, you know, the impact that this team is having on this community. So, you know, we feed off of that, and it's great to have them out there, and we definitely enjoy it.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. I can speak as a Mariner fan, a long-suffering Mariner fan. This has been an incredible season, and I think the city's ready to turn. I think it's ready to become a baseball city. So it's cool. It's cool to have you be a big part of that, Robbie. We really appreciate you taking the time. Wish you nothing but the best moving forward, and really look forward to talking to you in the postseason.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
There you go. There's Robbie Ray of your Seattle Mariners. If you guys missed any of that, came in the middle of it, whatever happened, it'll be available on the podcast page after the show. SeattleSports.com. Click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It will be right there. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by my newest, most favorite, bestest buddies in the whole world, Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Certain there's a framed picture of me in there that says, call the police if you see this face. Good to talk to Robbie Ray. He's having over 200 strikeouts for the fifth time in his career. He's at 201 right now, and we'll see if he hits. He's at 177 and a third or something like that in terms of innings, and he was talking about reaching the 200 inning mark. So closing in with just, 13 games left?
Yeah, 13. And I think
pretty soon, single digits. Mark my words, thumb. It'll be single digits.
It's, you know what? That is sustainable, single digit games.
It is.
It's lower and lower.
That's exactly right. It's inevitable. You can't stop it. You can't stop it. Hey, a reminder, a little programming note. With the Seahawks taking on the Falcons this Sunday on 710, you can catch the Mariners-Royals game in its entirety on 770 KTTH. The Mariners pregame coverage starts at 9 a.m. with Trident Talk. First pitch at 11 a.m. again, exclusively on 770 KTTH. That's this Sunday. Got a little conflict with the Seahawks and the Mariners, so that's where you can find the Mariner game. Seahawks, meanwhile, get ready for their game with the Falcons. And you look at, again, this Falcons team, I feel like record-wise, and I just watched the highlights, so I'm not going to be able to sit here and break down, well, they do this well, they don't do that well. What you see when you look at it is that they've put up a bunch of points in the first two games. They haven't won either game, but they've lost by a combined total of 5 points in those two games. So they're not out there just getting boat raced and teams just trucking them. I mean, they're in it. So they've been able to score almost double the amount of points the Seahawks have. So you wonder, all right, what are they in? What are they in store for?
The Rams game was garbage time, but yeah, they still put up those points. Down 28-3, but
they lost by a combined 5 points, though.
They have looked more impressive offensively than the Seahawks. That's for sure.
Yeah. So Pete Carroll and his team, specifically their running game.
The quarterback has been a big factor already. You know, they've really transitioned quickly to Marcus being in there and shifted the emphasis where he's a big part of the run game too. He's averaging almost 5 yards a carry. You know, so that's always a difficult deal, for us. You know, it always is because they run option football. So we got to take care of that.
And that's going to be really, really intriguing. I mean, that to me is the biggest, if you want to talk just position or what have you, in terms of key matchups in this game, is how do the Seahawks deal with the running game of the Falcons? Because as you saw against the 49ers, they didn't deal with it well at all. They got gashed. So what, they run 189 yards, I think the 49ers went for?
45 carries.
Yeah, I mean, and it
lined up and all day.
If Trey Lance didn't get hurt, I'm very curious to see what that number would have been. Because he threw three times, completed two passes for 30 yards. It was option football, just like he was talking about there with the Falcons. He was going to run it, or the running back was going to run it. And they were doing whatever they wanted. So, yeah, the Seahawks have got it. They got to get the tackling figured out first and foremost. They've got to make sure gap discipline is there. It's just the fundamentals seem to have been escaping them, specifically in that game. And listen, they got run on a bit with the Broncos as well. So that's something that, you know, very early, it's only two games. Not a great trend.
It's striking, really, how similar the Falcons are to the Seahawks in a lot of ways. I go back to the conversation you and Dave had with their play-by-play guy, Wes Durham. And Mariota is kind of in the same role as Geno Smith, where he's looking for a second chance. He was a backup after a starter originally and then kind of lost his way and had to find another opportunity. So it's a chance for him. And he's not the best throwing quarterback.
Mm-mm.
He's better than Trey Lance, because Trey Lance is an unknown. But the Niners wanted to just run Trey Lance before he got hurt. The Falcons are going to rely primarily on Marcus Mariota's legs. So you take away the passing element, you make them one-dimensional. Now can the Seahawks stop that dimension? Because the Niners were one-dimensional.
Yeah.
That wasn't a bad thing. We often think of one-dimensional in a bad way. The Niners wanted to be one-dimensional. It was very successful. So
yeah,
we'll
working.
See something similar from the Falcons, especially from the quarterback. And hopefully another week of practice, as Clint Hurt said, the tackling emphasis will be there.
Well, and you need to see individual step up. Yeah, as a defense, you've got to step up and just, you know, execute the fundamentals. Individually, Daryl Taylor's a guy we were expecting a lot from based on what we saw last year, which was, yeah, his second year in the league, but technically his rookie year because he didn't take a snap his first year, never suited up. So that was the first action he saw. Looked incredibly promising, raw, but you just saw it. So far, you haven't seen it in the first two games. And Clint Hurt talking about they've had talks with Taylor about fixing some of the key things they're seeing out there.
I addressed that stuff accountability-wise with him privately. What I'll say is obviously there's things he wants to play better. We have to continue to coach him better and clean up some details for him. But obviously we expect great things out of him collectively as a group. And there's plays that he's made, but we need the consistency to be right.
He's right. I mean, that's a guy you kind of went into the season going, all right, well, who's the guy? Who's the pass rusher on this team? You don't have a Bosa on the roster. You don't have that one-man wrecking crew that everybody has to gear up for, Aaron Donald. You don't have that guy. That's a collective. But if you're going to isolate a guy and say, well, the most likely candidate to be the problem that the offense you're facing has to game plan for would be Daryl Taylor. And we haven't seen that in these two games.
Yeah, there's so much potential there. And now you try to remember, okay, he is still very young. I mean, this is his second season. Technically, he was drafted in 2020, but his rookie season was last year. He got on the field for the first time last year. So now in a new defensive system, all new coaches, I'm sure there is some learning and some adjustments as well. 2 weeks feels like a lot because that's all we have to go on. But in the course of the season, this is not a lot. So hopefully it starts this week. But he has time this season, 15 more regular season games. I would expect to see some kind of impact from Daryl Taylor moving forward.
Yeah, it's this could be a great game for him to bust out. And you listen, they're at home. It's going to be favorable for them. They should win. I mean, listen, I don't even know what the point spread is on this game. I haven't looked, but these are very similar teams. They're teams that you look at both of them and go, okay, there's not a ton of expectation on either. You won one. You had a great first half against the Broncos. Second half wasn't great. And then it was just a lousy day against the Niners. And Falcons, for their part, they were down big early, 28-3, battled back. And it looks better on paper maybe than it is, losing by a combined 5 points. So I feel like there isn't a decided advantage for one or the other than the Seahawks are at home. That's what it feels like. Meanwhile, this is Friday. It's Friday, which means it's a Snoqualmie Casino Football Friday on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up, Jared Kelnick has returned. Could he be the spark the Mariners have been missing in that lineup? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob. We got Lefko in for Wyman. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Wings Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got mean text coming up in the next segment, so you still have a bit of time if you guys want to get creative and take your shots. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Somebody said something about did you guys didn't want to challenge Rob? I'm paraphrasing. I can't find the text. Yeah. But basically, when he said that he liked country music, that we were scared to tell him we didn't like it. Why would we do that? Why do you want to get confrontational? You go, what are you listening to? Oh, you were? That sucks. That's not how you do an interview. Come on.
Yeah.
Unless you know the guy really well, then you can mess with him. But I just asked him what he was listening to. I wasn't here to judge his music.
Maybe in person, right? Get a little fake confrontational.
If we're in person, you could joke with him. Yeah, you could see each other's face. Yeah. But yeah, he's with you on the phone, and you're just going, oh, so what do you listen to on the headphones? Country music. Oh, that's dumb. that doesn't make for a great conversation. Some might shut down after that. All right, so we got mean text coming up in the next segment. Again, 866-979-3776 is the text line, brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. But before we get to that, it was very, very good to see Jared Kelnick out there yesterday doing what he did. And that was, A, he drew a walk. He showed some patience up there at the plate. And then he comes up with the long fly that was absolutely crucial at the moment.
Here's the pitch to Jared. Swung on and belted. Deep to right field. Cable going back, looking up, and goodbye baseball way out of here to right. Welcome back, Jared Kelnick, his fifth home run of the season. And his first official at bat since his return, because he walked in the first. Belts a long home run way into the bleachers in right field here in the top of the fourth inning. How about that? It's now the A's 5 and the Mariners 4.
There you go. Big moment, comes up with a double later. I mean, just a great day for him out there. And I don't know if that's what you expect going forward. I mean, hopefully he's more relaxed. I think getting off to a start like that is huge, because it seemed like in the previous stints here, he'd get off to that slow start, whether he was grounding out, rolling over on a ball, striking out, just not seeing any success, and it felt like it would build. You could almost see the intensity building each plate appearance. And getting that out of the way early, having that game, drawing that walk, home run, double, maybe he can, you know, just kind of relax now and then, you know, do what he does naturally. He's got a ton of talent. Nobody's debating that. It's just, can he make it happen at this level?
It's also, it's a different guy into the lineup. Sometimes you have the same guys out there every day. They succumb to the pressure of the situation, or they run into a tough situation like in Oakland, where it's a dead atmosphere. You're playing against a team with such a bad record, it's hard to get motivated for it. Here comes a guy in Kelnick with a lot to prove, because he had been down in AAA for a little bit, gets up there, wants to make an impact, and that spark with his bat, you know, maybe not the emotional spark like Julio, because Jared Kelnick is wired a little differently. We saw that after the game. But maybe his spark at the plate can be exactly what this lineup needs, because those were two huge at-bats. They brought them back in that game.
I'd say three. They were three the just walk, for him individually. Mm-hmm. The walk, I thought, was big. He didn't see him chasing. You didn't see that anxiousness. I thought that was a big deal. And we had John Morosi on yesterday after the game and asked him if Kelnick looked any different to him mechanically, just his demeanor. Did he look different this time up?
He looks more relaxed, more at ease. And again, it's just one look, and so I really don't want to extrapolate too much. But I think at first look, he's taking better at bats. He was, I think, showing a better knowledge of the strike zone. And maybe he has finally gotten it in his mind that he's not going to worry so much where the fielders are and be too pull conscious or opposite field conscious, just hit. And his athleticism and his hands are so good when he just lets them be. And I think for him, it's just been a matter of repetition. He's still a young guy, and that he's still a very young player, and there's still plenty of time. I hope that he internalizes that message as well.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the biggest impediment to him has been him. He just seems so tightly wound, and he seemed like it yesterday, to be honest. I mean, post-game, I don't really know what happened there, and even Root Sports, they commented on it, but he was doing the post-game interview, and Ty France came and doused him with Gatorade, and usually you see guys kind of like, oh, man, geez, you got me. They're smiling, you know. It's celebratory. He looked legitimately annoyed. Like, he walked off shaking his head. I'm like, what is that? And the guys on Root were like, hey, it's okay to smile, man. It's okay to smile. You guys won. You had a great day. I was just like, that was an odd reaction.
So on Bump and Stacy, they had a theory that maybe Gatorade is bad for frosted tips. It could wash that out. He is wired differently. Even after the home run, I don't know if you noticed this. I happened to go back and see a clip of it. He was coming off the field after the home run. You'd think there'd be a smile at least, a lot of gratitude, a lot of excitement. No, stone-faced, gets the kind of almost matter-of-factly, gives the high fives, just walks into the dugout, puts the helmet on, the swelmet that they have.
Don't they call it the bombit now?
Yeah, whatever they call it now. They didn't even crack a smile. Just put it on, kept going about his business.
Yeah, he's built differently. He's just wired differently, I guess. I don't know. You know, he does have an intensity to him, and it just, you know, Julio plays with all this joy. Julio is like a giant kid out there. He's just everything. He's smiling. You see him joking around. He's talking to everybody. And I think Jared suffers in comparison that way, because he looks polar opposite. He looks like he's really uptight, and he's almost angry, and he's not having fun. And I mean, who knows? That's how that's the perception. You know, everybody's just sort of reading his body language, if you will. And maybe he's, you know, I've spoken to him briefly here and there. I don't even pretend to know the guy. So I don't know. He could be a great light individual behind the scenes, but maybe he's got, like pitchers, we asked Robbie Ray, the day you're pitching, what do you like? And he used to be that guy that would, don't talk to me, I just stare into my locker, had my headphones on. Maybe that's Jared on game day. Maybe he's just a guy who's just, that's how I focus.
And maybe he has to learn, like Robbie Ray said, maybe he has to figure out, or someone can help him with either not letting that affect him negatively, and yesterday it didn't, or teaching him that it's okay to relax and still be locked in and focused. Because I could see from that mindset, I've been like this with things, that you have to be that locked in and focused in order to perform at your best.
Yeah.
So maybe he's in that mindset of, if I'm relaxed and having fun, I'm not as locked in as I need to be.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows what it is? And I hope he's having fun. I loved what we saw yesterday. Again, I love him in the outfield, his defense, and all of that. He would be such a huge addition to this lineup. If he could, he doesn't have to duplicate yesterday every night. That's not realistic. But if he could just be a threat and just have pretty consistent success, you know, even in walks, just get on base, because he is a stolen base threat. He is a guy with speed. He can make things happen. So just seeing some success for him was pretty cool, and it gives you just a little glimpse as to what it could be like if he's rolling, and if you have Julio and you got Gino, and then it looks like a completely different lineup, and hopefully you can get Mitch and Ty healthy as well. Hey, a reminder, don't forget, you can join Mariners fans tonight and tomorrow at one of their official watch parties. The one tonight is at the Queen Anne Beer Hall. Tomorrow is at Rinehouse. Is that how you say that? Both places will have giveaways and specials for fans wearing Mariners gear. So you got to be wearing Mariners gear. You might even see the moose out at one of these spots. So you can find more info at seattlesports.com/events. All right. It's how we like to end the week. Mean text. You send them in anyway, but this is where we just ask you to be creative. We collect the best ones and unveil them. You still got a couple of minutes if you got something you want to unload here. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Mean text coming your way with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's the perfect way to end the week every week with Wyman and Bob. You guys say mean things to us. Just be creative. That's how we do it. We got the Mariners pregame show coming up at 4 o'clock, so we'll get through some of these. We've got our submissions from our buddy Adam Ray, who's in Memphis, apparently, on his way, rushing to the airport, but wanted a chance to take shots at us and Mike Salk, apparently. So we'll get to some of those. But Lefko, do you got some that have stuck out to you?
Oh, yeah. They were mean today.
Were they mean?
I got plenty. Well, because there are a lot are about me, so they're mean. So
go ahead. We'll
start with a 360. Thumb filling in for Dave is like a backache filling in for a sore neck.
You knew you were going to be a target.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you
especially when
you scolded them for their seafood restaurant recommendations and their lack of understanding of the standings.
It's like the backup quarterback. They sit off to the side, they're loved, or they're not thought of, and you step in and everyone hates you. So there it is. Got a few more along these lines. Carter from Tacoma. The Lefko and Bob Show sounds like the name of a public access TV show deep in Wisconsin where they discuss the newest fishing equipment.
Going Bob.
Yeah, all right. Maybe we'd go by our first names, though. Mike and Bob Show. Yeah. Bob and Mike.
Who says you get top billing? Look at you.
He just assumed because I took Wyman's name. I don't know. Wednesday, remember Wes Durham, the Falcons play-by-play guy?
I do remember
him. Yeah. Yes. So 360 says, Wes's voice should do audiobooks. Dave's voice should do audio pooping.
somebody said the 253, tell old shoulder pads to lay off the Vicodin and get back to work. Old shoulder pads. Where's the air? I'll read some from Adam. Find the one that somebody talked about. They called me something and said if I didn't know what it meant
for you
to
I
look at your thesaurus.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see. Adam, a few submissions here. Bob has the face of a guy who brushes his teeth before he eats ketchup out of a bag. Salk has the body of a guy who goes to the park and IDs kids before they get on the monkey bars. Let's see. This is a good one. Dave being gone is like Mickey not showing up to Disneyland if Mickey had a drinking problem. All right, he's got a couple more, but what do you got there?
I found the one. 206. Bob, you're a silver-toned, canorous radio host. If you're too stupid to understand what that means, ask Lefko to look it up in his thesaurus.
The one he brought with him to work today.
Along those lines also, Jen in Beaverton says, I can just see Mike the night before he knows he's going to be on the show the next day, snuggling up with his thesaurus, thinking of all the big words he's going to use.
Can't wait to unveil these.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. Clutching it tightly.
Adam says, Lefko has the face of a guy who texts, you up? To his Postmates driver.
Yeah, I need them to bring me more food. Would you not?
Oh, goodness. Let's see.
Someone related. A texter just related all of the things together, like when they do this. 509 says, What does Lefko know about seafood? He doesn't own a boat.
Good enough.
Good listener there. Yeah.
Oh, we got to get Adam on to tell that story. So good. So good. Let's see. Obviously, Adam has been listening because he said, Jared Kelnick is the kid who breaks your Xbox controller, grabs your last Pop-Tart, farts in your face, and still has the nerve to sleep over.
I mean, what? Ryan Divish did call him the Cobra Kai villain. So.
That's right. He said he's like Johnny Lawrence.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Some good ones here. Oh, 206. Dave thinks he can beat up a bear, but he can't come sit in a chair and talk into a microphone due to his knee. What a little wimp. Oh, no. We'll have to read that for Dave next week.
Nothing. This is 360. Nothing like karate chop and thumb wrestling taking over sports radio. Where's Dave again? And Carter from Tacoma really liked the Postmates driver one.
Yeah.
Sending a series of ha-has there.
206 says, as bad as the mean texts say you are, you'll never be as bad as Salk. There you go. That's a good one, right?
That's solid. That's
you
solid
insult
work.
Us, but you compliment us at the end. Appreciate it.
Let's see. 509 said, earlier in the week, you said you'd offer up a signed picture of Lefko at Edgar's. Why would I want Lefko's signature? It would just be a pizza sauce smudged thumbprint.
Can't argue with that one. You're right.
Yeah. Well, what was the last time? Crab sandwich?
Ooh, crabs. Oh,
you attacked
here.
That thing, man.
Yeah, crab sandwiches we've had.
You had sauce on the side of your mouth. You were just hunched over the table.
We had a meatball sub one time.
Yeah.
We had some pizza.
The crab sandwich for you was special because you went after it.
Yeah.
Like you hadn't eaten in a long time.
We hadn't eaten in a long time. programming note along those lines. Last time at Edgar's this regular season, next Friday, week from today.
Are we going to have special guests?
Yes, we'll have special guests.
Okay. Do we know who they are?
Who hopefully are not on the IL.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, boy. I didn't even think about that.
All right.
Jeez.
But boy, yeah, it'll be a big show. It'll be a big show out of that because on Friday, the 30th.
I didn't even think about that.
I didn't even think of that to right now.
Well, everybody knows who we're talking about now, but.
Okay.
All right. What else you got?
Now I'm depressed thinking about that.
Yeah, you just, you just gave him an out.
All right, so 253 says, since you're looking for recommendations for oxtail and seafood, here's one for Lefko's love of wax, Madame Tussauds.
That's a long-time listener there.
Yeah.
In the days you were eating the cheese covered in wax.
Shannon got me again, though, yesterday. Shannon Dreher, she tweeted out as they're on the flight a picture of a baby bell. Said, yo, Mike. That was it, and then people jumped in on that.
That was such a classic moment where Dave is looking at you over my shoulder with a look of disbelief, and he said, are you eating the wax? You were. What did you just thought it was a flavorless covering?
Yeah, I thought it was the cover, almost like the rind to the watermelon. You know, it's just part of it. You can chew on it a little bit, and then
eating the cheese and the wax.
Yeah.
And he was just looking at me with his nose wrinkled up, just like, "What are you doing?"
To be fair, I only took about a bite or two, and then realized, yeah, I probably shouldn't eat this anymore. There's a big string in the middle of it, so I did learn. But it was a humorous moment.
All right, do you have one to go out on?
Do I have one to go out on? I don't know, actually.
All right.
I think we used them all.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it. We're good.
That's it for us. We're going to turn you over to the Mariners pregame show. Want to thank our guests today, Kobe Bryant, Ken Walker, and Robbie Ray. If you missed any of it, head to the podcast page, seattlesports.com. It'll be right there waiting for you after the show each and every day. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday with Wyman and Bob.